I think individually we're all frustrated. We would like it to come together, but I think we're also very invested in making something that works.
The Alaska State House is going into the start of the legislative session with no clear majority coalition. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 13th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Kodiak's Tanner crab fishery is at risk over disagreements on the price.
We haven't been given anything to consider. $2.50 isn't a number that we'll consider.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
The state legislative session begins on Tuesday, and the Alaska House is still not organized. That means representatives have not formed a majority coalition or assigned leadership roles. And as Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports, there's also no clear timeline for when that will happen.
This is the third legislative cycle in a row in which the House has begun the session without clear leadership. That means the House can't move ahead with its legislative business when the session begins. No forming committees, no hearing bills, nothing. The Senate organized back in November, but without the House to work in tandem, the legislative process will be seriously slowed down. The House is nearly evenly split along party lines, with 21 Republicans and 19 Democrats and Independents.
Now the question is, how are we going to figure out an organization that goes forward? Because neither side can go independently on their own without the help of the other.
That's Ketchikan Independent Representative Dan Ortez. In recent years, the House majority has been a multi-party coalition, but it's unclear whether that will happen this year. Ortez says he would rather have a larger, more moderate majority instead of a narrow one, in which any one member could end up stalling an action.
I would not be inclined to be a part of a coalition that would only have 21 members, for specifically that reason.
Forming a coalition involves lots of discussion between lawmakers behind the scenes to identify common interests and policy goals. House Republicans have been somewhat reticent to discuss how the process is playing out. Anchorage Representative Tom McKay, for example, said over email that he couldn't comment on the organization process, claiming it's, quote, confidential caucus business. Another Anchorage Republican, Representative Dan Sadler, declined to comment on the dynamics of organization conversations with individual lawmakers or the size of a possible coalition.
I think a lot of folks are very hopeful that we'll have some organization in place so the people's representatives can hit the ground running on the first day of session. Your guess may be as good as mine as to how likely that is to happen.
In 2021, the House organization process took 24 days. In 2019, the process dragged on 31 days into the session. Freshman Sitka Independent Representative Rebecca Himshute, along with other moderate members, could play an important role in forming a coalition.
So when I first ran, I evaluated who am I, and I just recognized that I am someone who very much believes in that middle road. And so I chose to run as an independent, and only later did it occur to me that that could become valuable in terms of trying to put together a majority.
Himshute said so far her discussions have mostly been one-on-one phone calls to lay out her policy priorities around education and state fiscal health. But she expects things to speed up once the body convenes in Juneau.
I think individually we're all frustrated. We would like it to come together, but I think we're also very invested in making something that works.
She says while she's not sure a coalition will come together by Tuesday, she's confident that whatever structure is formed will be, quote, worth waiting for. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
A divided Alaska Supreme Court has ruled that an Anchorage Democrat who won a state House race was a qualified candidate. Earlier this week, Superior Court Judge Herman Walker Jr. issued a decision finding that Democrat Jennifer Jenny Armstrong met residency requirements and accepting the results of the November election. His decision was appealed by Republican Liz Vasquez, who lost to Armstrong, and four others who joined in challenging Armstrong's win. The Supreme Court issued a brief order shortly after hearing arguments today. Three justices heard the case. Governor Mike Dunleavy announced his carbon management bill package yesterday. When introduced to the legislature, the bill will outline new regulations that will help the state break into growing carbon markets. Dunleavy believes it could bring millions or billions in new revenue to the state.
Alaska is poised and has a real potential to monetize and capitalize upon the discussions regarding carbon.
Carbon dioxide is the most commonly produced greenhouse gas. The market for storing carbon has been growing. Carbon resources are increasingly sold and traded in the form of carbon offsets or credits. Companies and other entities can buy or sell them to comply with greenhouse gas emissions regulations or to meet voluntary emissions goals. Dunleavy says there's a lot of potential to expand the market for carbon in Alaska.
The question, of course, is what amount of money could Alaska realize in this process?
Carbon is naturally stored through biological processes in trees, kelp, and soil. It's also possible to compress carbon and pump it underground. In Alaska, Dunleavy hopes to do that in the oil and gas basins of Cook Inlet and the North Slope. Alaska Native regional corporations have already been selling carbon credits since 2015. They've brought in hundreds of millions of dollars in recent years by selling credits to companies in California and elsewhere, and Dunleavy pointed to their success. Though the new legislation deals with one of the most important greenhouse gases, Matthew Jackson with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council says it's not a climate policy.
It's more of a financial tool than a climate solution. And I think if that financial tool can be used to incentivize new kinds of economies, regenerative economies, then maybe carbon credits can be good. But if this is just a new way for the state of Alaska to make money from things that it's already doing, that's not necessarily bad, but it has nothing to do with solving the climate crisis.
The bill will be formally introduced sometime after the legislative session begins Tuesday. Kodiak's biggest tanner crab fishery in nearly 40 years is set to open on Sunday. But the fleet is standing down. Fishermen say they won't go fishing for the prices offered by local canneries. As KMXD's Kirsten Dobrath reports, it's the latest wrinkle on a winter fishing season already impacted by closures and strikes.
Processors in Kodiak offered $2.50 per pound for tanners when negotiations started earlier this month. Kevin Abina is the secretary and treasurer for the Kodiak Crab Alliance Cooperative, which represents about 120 permit holders in the fishery. He says since then, all of Kodiak's canneries haven't budged from their initial price.
We haven't been given anything to consider. $2.50 isn't a number that we'll consider.
Last year, fishermen were paid a record of more than $8 per pound. The tanner crab fishery was closed in 2021, but back in 2020, prices were still more than $4. This year's harvest levels for the Kodiak fishery are the biggest they've been in nearly 40 years, at 5.8 million pounds. That's more than five times the size of last year's quota. Combined with the fisheries in Chignik and the South Peninsula, 7.3 million pounds total of tanners are up for grabs in the westward region. Last year, the State Department of Fish and Game estimates the Kodiak region alone was worth over $10 million. The big quota this year also means more boats are participating. Last year, 87 vessels fished for tanners. This year, 109 were registered as of Friday morning. That includes some Bering Sea crabbers whose seasons have been canceled because of crashing snow crab and king crab populations. Abina says some processors out west have been offering around $4 for tanner crabs. That doesn't help the local fleet, though, most of whom can't make the trip out the chain. And it doesn't help the community, which collects municipal taxes off of seafood landings.
This is a community deal. Everybody in the fleet has spent a lot of money on getting ready to do this fishery. Everybody has invested money.
Abina declined to call it a strike, but the action is similar to a strike in another fishery earlier this year. Bering Sea fishermen successfully pushed up the price per pound for Pacific cod after striking. Abina says the entire fleet, including fishermen in Chignik and the South District, is holding out until local processors offer better prices.
The feeling of unity is really strong, and it's pretty special. It's hard to get a get a diverse group like we have here on board. Everybody has things that they want to move on to after crab. Some boats go cod fishing, some boats go dragging for pollock. Some guys will be going right into black cod.
When reached by phone Friday morning, Pacific Seafoods had no comment. Other processors could not be reached. The cooperative's next meeting with permit holders is Saturday. Abina says if they get the right price, the soonest they'd go fishing is Monday, a day after the scheduled opener. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, eager beavers are moving north in Alaska and impacts can be seen from space.
You go out to these windswept tundra areas and you just think, really?
Yes, really. That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you.
There was a funeral in Fairbanks yesterday for a man who died last month of exposure during an extreme cold snap. 55-year-old Charles Akiviana was found dead December 23rd in West Fairbanks near where he was living in a tent. In a report to the Fairbanks City Council Monday, City Housing Coordinator Bryn Butler said she visited the site and Akiviana appeared to have been set up to camp in the cold.
Charles had a tent there and he had a heater and a propane tank and a lot of other items that I would see that he would think that he was okay to be out in the cold. I've been doing encampment outreach for a while now in Fairbanks, and he looked like he had a pretty good setup there to keep warm. And it looked to me as though his tent and things caught on fire. And I think that that would be why he was out and he succumbed to the elements.
Alaska State Troopers confirmed that. Butler said a search of a homeless management information system found that Akiviana was not receiving services. She said she looked around the area of his tent and found no indication of anyone else camping there. In a follow-up interview, Butler said she's asking the public for help locating homeless encampments around Fairbanks so she can reach out to residents.
So we're not like, hey, you have to come into town and do what we want you to do to get the services that are needed. It's about meeting people where they're at and bringing services to them if that's what they want.
The Fairbanks Housing and Homeless Coalition will hold an annual Homeless Connect event January 31st. 3 years after he was first arrested, a Soldotna doctor pleaded guilty this week to a charge that he overprescribed addictive narcotics on the Kenai Peninsula. Under the terms of a plea agreement, Laverne Davidheiser has agreed to pay a $10,000 fine and serve a year of probation. KDLL Sabine Pooks has more.
Davidheiser was a practicing osteopath who owned and ran Family Medical Clinic in Soldotna. And in 2019, federal agents arrested the doctor for allegedly prescribing more than 700,000 narcotic pills to patients since 2017, which they say earned him the nickname Candyman. Federal officials say Davidheiser's patients knew they could easily get pain medication from him, including hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, methadone, and tramadol. The plea agreement doesn't mention most of those substances, but it says Davidheiser admits to knowingly distributing oxycodone in a way that was, quote, outside the usual course of professional practice and without a legitimate medical purpose, end quote. Davidheiser has agreed to serve 12 months of probation and pay a fine of $10,000, and the plea agreement says the federal government will dismiss 2 other charges against him. According to the original charges against Davidheiser, undercover investigators posed as patients in his practice with little justification for opioid prescriptions and gave indications of opioid addiction and abuse in 2019. Still, the charges say Davidheiser prescribed them opioids, and he agreed to plead guilty in one of those instances from May 2019. A consulting doctor says in the original charges that a review of Davidheiser's prescriptions shows he made over 11,000 prescriptions for controlled substances in fewer than 4 years, 3/4 of which were for opioids, which the doctor notes is very high. Davidheiser was first licensed by the state of Alaska in 1978, according to the plea agreement, and since the charges, his license was voluntarily suspended. Parties did not recommend reinstating that license as part of the agreement. The judge accepted the plea agreement at a hearing Wednesday. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Attorneys throughout Alaska will offer free legal advice on Monday. The annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day event provides free legal counsel for Alaska-based civil issues. Those can include family law, estate planning, public benefits, employment law, or landlord and tenant issues. Eric Vang is an attorney with Alaska Legal Services in Juneau. He says the goal is to give low to moderate income Alaskans the information they need to figure out next steps.
If you have no experience with the legal system before, and like you say you get a notice from a state or federal agency asking you to do something, you may not know that that's something you could appeal.
Krista Scully is the Alaska Bar Association's pro bono director. She says people can prepare for the clinic by gathering any paperwork that might be relevant to their cases.
If people have paperwork, you know, if they have an active court case, or if, let's say, it's a housing issue and they have a question about their lease, any sort of supportive documentation would be really helpful to bring.
This is the first year services will be offered in person since the pandemic began. Events will be held in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and for the first time this year, Bethel. Anchorage-based attorneys will fly to Bethel to support local attorneys at their clinic. Scully says they expect to get questions about disaster recovery efforts following the September storm caused by Typhoon Murbach.
The FEMA process is winding down, and so a lot of those denials will be happening soon. And so exploration around how to appeal denials and really identifying what legal needs are present will really start to be dialed in soon.
Juneau attorneys will be hosting two clinics. The first is in the Mendenhall Valley at the Alaska Legal Services Corporation from 9 a.m. to noon. The second one is downtown at the Diamond Courthouse from 1 to 4 p.m. In Anchorage, services will be available from noon to 2 p.m. and from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Mountain View Girls and Boys Club. In Fairbanks, they'll be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the J.P. Jones Community Center. Bethel's clinic will be from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Evangelical Covenant Church. Alaskans can get civil legal questions answered year-round at the Alaska Bar Association's virtual legal clinic.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. Physical therapists are movement and rehabilitation experts. Choosing a physical therapist is a personal choice. A referral is not required in Alaska for most insurances. Use the physical therapy professionals in your community to reach your goals. Now, the State Physical Therapy Association is offering physical therapy in Anchorage at no charge for those with financial barriers to care. Learn more at aptaalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Physical Therapy Association.
The Copper Basin 300 Sled Dog Race gets underway tomorrow in Glen Allen. Among 28 mushers who had signed up as of last night were defending champ Brent Sass, Nicholas Petit, who won the four previous years, and 2016 champ Matt Hall. The CB 300 race trail follows a loop from the Glen Allen start to Tulsana Lodge, Lake Louise, Sourdough, Myers Lake, and Chistochina before finishing back in Glen Allen. Well, pageants like Miss Alaska give the contestants a chance to talk about their favorite causes. Each will talk about their work in the community at the competition in Anchorage this weekend. KNBA's Hannah Bissett talked with one of the contestants about how she hopes to inspire young Alaska Natives to embrace their culture.
Shodine Mayo of Fairbanks hopes to be the next Miss Alaska. After earning a bachelor's degree in creative media and film, a local TV station hired her as a reporter. Today, she works towards a master's degree at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Mayo is both Alaska Native and a part of Navajo Nation. Recently, Mayo worked with CBS to raise awareness on the importance of Indigenous representation in media.
I've never really seen myself in media in any other place like that, so I think I would really want to champion narrative change, especially as a voice that is not as heard in the industry.
Mayo is originally from Stevens Village, an isolated community on the Yukon River. She has also spent time growing up in Fairbanks and in the Navajo Nation, where she says she was inspired by traditional Native ways of life, experiences that she loves to share.
Rural communities like the one that I grew up in are important and were necessary. I really wanted to share that message and to, give hope. And it's really been an exciting process.
Mayo says she spent the last year getting ready for the competition. Her platform is about changing storylines for and about rural communities. She's been showered with tremendous community support, from kind posts on social media to donations. That includes gifts of time and effort, like those from Dagula Erickson, an Indigenous artist who made Mayo's earrings for the evening gown competition.
And what makes this super special is that these earrings will be reflecting a traditional design, and they'll also be made from natural resources. So I'll be taking my heritage on stage.
A stage that will be shared by about a dozen contestants from across the state. The winner will go on to represent Alaska in the Miss USA competition later this year in Reno, Nevada. In Anchorage, I'm Hannah Bissett.
Results are in from Kodiak's 50th annual Christmas bird count. That's when avian enthusiasts gather each year for one day in December to survey the island's bird population and send their results to the state and National Audubon Society. KMXT's Brian Venois reports local birders documented the most biodiversity in the state.
68 eager birders gathered on December 18th to find and document as many birds as possible. That group split into 14 ground teams, 21 feeder watchers, and even two boats to scour northern areas around the island. Bill Pyle compiled this year's results. He says there's a lot of work that goes into it.
Certainly for uncommon, the rare species, extra documentation is required. And so there's a form for that, describing the bird, its characteristics, plumage size, what have you.
He says altogether, Kodiak birders counted over 11,100 individual birds. That's just shy of the 50-year average. But despite the smaller individual animal count, it was one of the most diverse on record, with 81 species. Kodiak's Christmas bird count results are compiled locally. One person then verifies the data and sends it to the state's Audubon Society. This year, Kodiak took the crown for most diverse counts in the state. Pyle says their count hit that mark thanks to fair weather as well as the huge breadth groups were able to cover.
We've got enough people to cover a range of habitats, including Chiniac Bay, part of Marmot Bay area out in the ocean, as well as people climbing mountains. So, with the range of coverage and the number of people we have, you're bound to encounter something that's like a little out of the ordinary.
And Pyle says this year was noteworthy in more ways than one.
We had several species that required extra documentation this year because of their rarity. And so I've received photos and forwarded those copies of those photos on to the next level of person that's going to evaluate.
This year's most unique find, a rufous hummingbird.
That's clearly tops for unique species. I mean, I was looking at a map that was shown to me by the guy who's taking care of this hummingbird, and the next nearest is this species, rufous hummingbird, is like in Washington State. Usually they're wintering in Mexico and across some of the southern tier of the U.S. states.
More information about the Kodiak Audubon and local birding can be found on their website or their Facebook page. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
Beavers are moving into the Arctic. Scientists at the University of Alaska Fairbanks are seeing thousands of new beaver ponds changing streams and rivers, and they're accelerating climate change. The effects are so dramatic they can be seen from space. KUAC's Robin reports.
Climate change is allowing taller shrubs to move into the Arctic, and beavers are following.
It's shocking the places that they are. You go out to these windswept tundra areas and you just think, really?
Dr. Ken Tape is an ecologist with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He and his colleagues have found beaver lodges in those unlikely treeless plains with few shrubs. But overall, the Alaskan Arctic is becoming a friendlier place for beavers.
There's more shrubby vegetation, winters are shorter, and there's more unfrozen water in these streams. So we know that their habitat's improving.
Tape says American beavers are now rebounding from over-trapping in the past, but he has no evidence that they have lived in the Arctic before.
It's hard for us to tell how much of this is them just reclaiming some former range and how much of this is climate change encouraging them into these new areas.
Tape and his colleagues Jason Clark, Benjamin Jones, and Benjamin Gagliotti from University of Alaska Fairbanks and Seth Kantner from Kotzebue published a paper last spring about the beaver intrusion. They looked at aerial photos from the early 1950s and found no signs of beaver north of Alaska's boreal forests. Then in 1980s satellite imagery, the first signs of widened streams and rivers began to appear. In pictures from 2003 to 2017, the beaver ponds doubled. In one near Noatak, what used to be a squiggly line of a creek now looks like a chain of beads as ponds form behind beaver dams. The group found from 11 to 12,000 new beaver ponds across northwest Alaska, from Nome to Kotzebue. Where they didn't see them was on the far north slope, past the Brooks Range. The images are pretty convincing evidence that a warming Arctic is what's driving the beaver colonization.
We've caught them in the act. All of northern Alaska has zero beaver ponds. And the reason, when you sort of overlay topographic and climatic variables on those 12,000 locations, what you see is that temperature is a big constraint. It is the big constraint that is preventing them from going on the North Slope.
The data also show that the beavers are accelerating the warming.
When you put a pond on a stream or on pre-existing tundra vegetation, it absorbs heat more readily. That warmer water is going to thaw permafrost, which we see happening.
There's a lot more open water, more melting permafrost, and more groundwater flow now across the Seward Peninsula. And whether this is good or bad depends on how adaptable you are. A warming Arctic will benefit some species.
At the end of winter, that's your coldest moment of the year. You still have liquid water at the bottom of these ponds. And so it's almost like having a groundwater spring. You're going to have species in that stream that suddenly can survive year round.
Beaver colonization of the Arctic represents a disturbance as great as wildfire, the scientists say. There's no other animal that has changed the Arctic so much, so fast, except for humans. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Kavitha George and Hannah Bissett in Anchorage, Anna Canny and Katie Anastas in Juneau, Kirsten Dobrath and Brian Venois in Kodiak, Dan Bross and Robin in Fairbanks, and Sabine Pooks in Kenai. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Madeline Rose is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media runs on membership. Thank you for supporting this station with a donation today. If you would like to play an integral part in what you're listening to, public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. If you are already a member or corporate sponsor, thank you. If you'd like to learn more about how to become a member or sponsor, it's easy. Start with a call to your public radio station. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.